Hello, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. And as usual, we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. Our first story today is entitled Home Rule Referendum Posed to Georgetown Voters. And this is by Jennifer Bailey. Georgetown. A referendum question will be on the November 3rd ballot for Georgetown voters. The question reads, shall the city of Georgetown become a home rule unit of local government? According to the Illinois Municipal League, the purpose of home rule is to allow for local solutions to local issues and problems. A municipality with home rule status can exercise any power and perform any function unless it is specifically prohibited from doing so by state law. In contrast, a non-home rule municipality may only exercise powers for which express authority is provided by state law. This means that non-home rule communities are dependent on obtaining grants of authority from the General Assembly and Governor. Home rule states can be achieved in one of two ways. One, a municipality automatically achieves home rule status when its population exceeds 25,000 residents. If the municipality's population dips below this threshold, it continues to be home rule, but the clerk is required to certify the question of home rule for submission to the voters at the next general election. And two, communities with fewer than 25,001 residents can become home rule by passing a local referendum. Home rule municipalities have the power to self-govern in areas that are uniquely local in nature. Home rule municipalities in Illinois have the ability to regulate on any subject that is of local concern, provided the regulation thereof is not limited or prohibited by federal or state statute or constitutional provision. Currently, there are 217 home rule communities in Illinois. Our objective is, it's a health and welfare type of thing, said Georgetown City Council Ward 3 Alderman Mike Scott. He said the reason the council decided to seek home rule status through the public referendum is to have some more tools to take care of ordinance violations, abandoned houses, and other health and safety issues. He said they have problems with residential properties not being habitable, and one idea for the safety of residents is the possibility of doing inspections on homes that are going to be rented. He said they'd like to address these, not only habitable properties, and get rid of the slumlord issues of landlords who don't live nearby and rent out these properties. Scott said issues are currently going through municipal court, but fines are not cleaning up or fixing the problem. The problem still exists, he said. Under Georgetown's current form of government, after the court makes decisions, nothing else is being done to clean up or fix properties. We've wasted everybody's time, Scott said, adding that without a judge's order, people don't care anymore. Georgetown officials also are working with the local land bank on properties. They've had one house torn down where a tree was growing through the roof. A neighbor obtained the land. Scott said by Georgetown being a home rule community, it won't fix everything, but would offer other options to use to help resolve issues. Georgetown officials are planning a public meeting question and answer session on the referendum, possibly at the high school. Meeting plans have been postponed due to COVID-19. Georgetown has a population of about 3,200. Our next story is entitled Two Women Face Off in 15th District. And this story is also by Jennifer Bailey. With U.S. Representative John Shimkus, Republican from Collinsville, deciding not to seek re-election for the 15th Congressional District seat in the U.S. Congress, two women who won in the primary election earlier this year now will be facing off in the November 3rd election. Democrat Erica Weaver of Mattoon is facing Republican candidate Mary Miller of Oakland. The commercial news didn't receive answers to election questionnaires from either candidate. The 15th Congressional District, which includes all or part of 33 counties, including Vermilion County, and stretches across southern and central Illinois, will most likely be eliminated after the 2020 census because its population has been steadily dwindling, according to experts. U.S. Census Bureau data shows that from 2013 to 2018, the district's population dropped by about 14,000 to 690,000, jeopardizing a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives because a congressional district must have roughly 710,000 residents. Population drops allow lawmakers, particularly those in the majority party of a state, to redraw congressional district maps in a process called redistricting. In Illinois, Democrats dominate both the General Assembly and the Governor's Office, empowering them to map the entire state's congressional districts. Map drawing is slated to begin next year, according to the Associated Press. The redistricting calculus means the winner will likely serve just one term, according to the Associated Press. In uncontested local races, Thomas Bennett for representative in the General Assembly 106th Representative District, Dave Stone for Vermilion County Recorder, Erica Briggs for Vermilion County Auditor, Jane McFadden for Vermilion County Coroner, Aaron Hurd for Vermilion County Regional Superintendent of Schools to serve an unexpired 2-year term, Joel Bird, Vermilion County Board District 1, Chuck Mockby III, and Kevin Green for Vermilion County Board District 2, Shelley McLean for County Board District 3, Chrissy Walls for County Board District 5, Mary Supernant and Tom Morris for County Board District 6, and Becky Stark for a full term, and Diana Fraser Brenneman for an unexpired 2-year term for County Board District 9. Briggs won in the primary. Incumbent Auditor Bill Wright didn't seek re-election. Our next story is a staff report entitled Families to Gather Virtually to Honor Babies. Born at 34 weeks, Carolina Bletcher did not survive delivery. Just a couple of months later, an invitation arrived inviting her parents to participate in a memorial. It was hard to accept, yet her parents decided one way to manage the grief was to accept the invitation. Remember, and come together with others who experienced the same kind of loss during the Shining Light Memorial for Pregnancy and Infant Loss event held at Carl's Shining Light Infant Memorial Garden. This year, the free event from 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 15th, will be held virtually from the garden with quiet times of remembrance, accompanied by harp music and inspirational messages of hope from Carl Chaplin, Florian Kamanda, and Linda Ellison, retired certified perinatal bereavement counselor. Thanks to generous support from the Carl Center for Philanthropy, this event remains free and open to all. Christina and Kyle Bletcher will be participating in memory of Carolina, as they always do with their parents on October 15th, the same day recognized by families internationally as Pregnancy and Infant Loss Remembrance Day. "It makes me feel like I am a part of something," Christina said, who also experienced 3 early losses. Now, she and Kyle have a rainbow baby, a term for a child born to a family who have previously lost a child due to miscarriage, stillbirth, or death during infancy. Noxlin, born last year, with the Lynn part of her name borrowed from Carolina, is in great health and just started taking her first steps. Visitors to the Shining Light Infant Memorial Garden will find the garden beautifully decorated during the week of October 12th. Families have an opportunity to visit on their own and pick up a small remembrance gift while socially distancing and wearing face coverings to protect themselves and others from the spread of coronavirus. The garden is visible from West Church Street near Park Street. Visitors may park in the north parking garage near the hospital. This is our way of giving families comfort while honoring their babies. Rachel Campbell, registered nurse of labor and delivery and perinatal grief and bereavement liaison at Carl, said, "Sometimes pregnancy loss is pushed to the back burner, but parents need to know that it is okay to not feel okay. Carl has a whole team here when you are ready to reach out for support," Christina said. Next up, we have another staff report. This one is entitled, "Scouts to Host Family Fall Sports Event." Catlin, the changing of the leaves means the cold weather is around the corner. The Prairie Lands Council of the Boy Scouts of America wants to provide one more fun outdoor event for families before the chilly wind comes to Illinois. Despite whatever weather on Sunday, October 18th, a celebration of Cub Scouting fun will be held for all Scouts and their friends, as well as the general public, to enjoy the wilderness at Camp Robert Drake near Catlin. The Smilin' Pumpkin Outdoor Sports Fest will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. throughout the 400-acre camp. Events will include shooting sports, games, and pedal cars. All families are welcome to attend and discover the fun of scouting. Any age youth can register to participate, but the activities are targeting the 5 to 11-year-old youth. The fee for the event is $10 per youth participant. All Smilin' Pumpkin participants will appreciate the scenic beauty of Camp Drake, especially out on the hiking trails along the Salt Fork River with the beautiful fall colors throughout the woodland. Current Cub Scouts are encouraged to bring a friend to discover the opportunities in scouting. Cub Scouting is an entertaining, family-based activity for young people to discover new skills, explore their community, and participate in indoor and outdoor events to gain confidence from positive experiences. The Smilin' Pumpkin Outdoor Sports Fest is a chance to visit the local scout camp and learn about the fun of Cub Scouting. Participants for the event can register on the day of the activity at the Camp Drake Dining Hall, adjacent to the main parking area. For additional information, contact the Raymond Lee Scout Service Center by phone at 800-464-7291, extension 6447, or visit the Camp Drake website at www.campdrake.com. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, October 13th. And the first today is for Dick Hurd. Dick Hurd went to his true home on October 9th, 2020. A celebration of his life will be held at a later date, as yet to be determined. Dick and his family request that, in lieu of flowers, contributions be made to help Haiti. Dr. Mark Fulton through Mission Haiti Medical, P.O. Box 2252, Anderson, Indiana 46018, or help support the Haitian bakery that he helped start by sending funds to Phyllis Newby through Hand to the Plow Ministries at 16221 Rawls Road, Sarasota, Florida 34240. Robison Chapel in Catlin is handling arrangements. Beverly Wood. Beverly Wood was called home by our Lord Thursday, October 8th, 2020, at 10:25 a.m. at North Logan Healthcare in Danville, Illinois. As per Beverly's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with the arrangements. Interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Mary Josephine Graham. Mary Josephine Graham was born on March 13, 1928, in Rossville, Illinois. She went to be with her Heavenly Father on October 10, 2020. A celebration of life service will be held on Friday, October 16th at 1 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Dave Hastings and Ramey Gordon will co-officiate. A 2 p.m. public graveside committal service will be in Sunset Memorial Park following the celebration of life service. Visitation will be held on Thursday, October 15, 2020, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the service and or visitation wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made in Mary's memory to Central Park Church of Christ. Deborah Harrier. Deborah Harrier, age 65, died on Saturday, October 10, 2020, at Ascension St. Vincent Hospital in Carmel, Indiana, with her loving daughter by her side. Visitation will be held from 1 o'clock p.m. to 3 p.m. on Friday, October 16, 2020, at Myers Mortuary at 1502 North Lebanon Street in Lebanon, Indiana. Funeral services will follow visitation at 3 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home in Lebanon. Myers Mortuary and Boone County Crematory have been entrusted with her cremation arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the COPD Foundation at 3300 Ponce de Leon Boulevard, Miami, Florida, 33134. Ted Osborne. Ted Harold Osborne, 74, of Rosedale, Indiana, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away at 12:40 a.m. on October 8, 2020, at his home with his family by his side. A celebration of life service will be held on Friday, October 16th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Chaplain Rick May will officiate. Burial will be in Lower Mound Cemetery with military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210. Visitation will be held on Thursday, October 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of service and or visitation wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made in Ted's memory to the Park Vermilion Humane Society. William Allen Case. William A. Case, 84, of Danville, passed away on Saturday, October 10, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. He was born on August 24, 1936. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 17, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Services will be at the end of the funeral home, and he will be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be held that evening, prior on Friday, October 16th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Jacqueline Miller. Jacqueline P. Miller, 84, of Williamsport, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away at 7:56 p.m. on October 8, 2020, at her home with her family by her side in Williamsport, Indiana. As per Jacqueline's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is assisting the family with arrangements. Interment will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Dorothy Ellen Goebel. Dorothy Ellen Hawkins Goebel, 92, pass to her eternal home at 1:07 p.m. on Friday, October 9th, 2020, at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. A private celebration of life service will be held on Thursday, October 15th, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in All Hands Cemetery with a public graveside committal service at 11:30 a.m. on Thursday, October 15th, 2020. A public visitation will be held on Wednesday, October 14th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that those in attendance of the graveside committal service and or visitation wear a mask and practice social distancing. Memorials may be made in Dorothy's memory to Harbor Light Hospice or to the Hawthorne Inn Resident Activity Fund. Michael A. Mullins. Michael Anthony Mullins, Sr., 60, of Georgetown, passed away at 7:45 p.m. Friday, October 9th, 2020, at his home surrounded by his family. A celebration of Michael's life will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 17th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown, Illinois, at 200 East West Street, with Pastor James Blue officiating. Visitation will be from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, October 16th, at the funeral home. It is kindly requested that face masks be worn and social distancing is practiced by those in attendance of the visitation and service. He will be laid to rest in Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given in his name to his family to assist with final expenses. Frederick Bear Bales. Frederick Bear Bales, 74, of Danville, died Friday, October 9, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. today, Tuesday, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Fred Thornsboro will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Christina Foster. Christina Foster, 57, of Danville, died at 12:34 p.m. on Wednesday, October 7th, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at Leek and Sons Funeral Home at 304 East Williams Street in Danville. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery, also in Danville. A public visitation will be from 1 to 5 p.m. on a Wednesday and at 10 a.m. Thursday, both at the funeral home. Christopher Taflinger. Christopher Taflinger, 38, of Westville, formerly of Tilton, died at 4:47 a.m. Sunday, October 11, 2020, in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street, in Tilton. Megan Nigra. Megan Jean Nigra, 44, of Westville, left us Wednesday, October 7th, 2020. A celebration of Megan's life will be from 3 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, October 14th, at Maple Grove Lodge at Forest Glen Preserve, 20301 900 North Road, Georgetown, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to House Rabbit Society of St. Louis, Missouri, 75 Elizabeth Drive, Fenton, Missouri, 63026. And that's the end of the obituaries for this Tuesday. We're going to return to some other stories from the commercial news. This is another staff report entitled, Man Dies in I-74 Accident Saturday Morning. Danville. An early morning accident Saturday left one man dead on I-74. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden identified the victim as Arnold B. Cravens, 54, of Tilton. An autopsy was scheduled for Saturday. At 4:23 a.m. Saturday, October 10th, a 1999 Pontiac Trans Am was traveling westbound on I-74 in the right lane near milepost 211, according to a press release by the Illinois State Police. A 2007 Toyota FJ Cruiser was also traveling westbound on I-74 in the right lane directly ahead of the Trans Am. For an unknown reason, the Trans Am struck the rear of the Toyota, causing the Trans Am to slide off the roadway and come to rest against the median cable barrier. After the impact, the Pontiac struck the guardrail on the right side of the roadway and came to rest in the lanes of traffic. The driver of the Trans Am received fatal injuries and was pronounced deceased on scene by the Vermilion County Coroner. All lanes of I-74 were reopened at approximately 10 a.m. No further information will be disseminated at this time. And another staff report, this one is entitled VA Eliana Healthcare System to Hold a Drive-Up Clinic. Danville. The Department of Veterans Affairs, VA, is ready for flu season, and so is VA Eliana Healthcare System. VA has increased vaccine availability this year in anticipation of a high demand during the coronavirus pandemic and increased locations where veterans can get their flu shots. The flu vaccine can reduce the risk of influenza-associated illness and hospitalization. Vaccines will be available from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., October 19th through the 23rd, at the Building 98 parking lot by the chapel at Eliana Healthcare System, 1900 East Main Street in Danville. Getting vaccinated is more important than ever this season to reduce individual risk, minimize the spread of flu to people at high risk, and to prevent healthcare facilities from being overwhelmed with patients with the flu and/or COVID-19. Flu prevention strategies include vaccination, wearing a face covering, washing hands frequently, and practicing physical distancing, largely the same as those for COVID-19. For any veterans that are not enrolled, enrollment staff will be available at the Danville, Lincoln, Morton, Peoria, and Urbana dates, and will be able to enroll veterans on the spot and obtain a flu shot. Veterans are encouraged to bring an ID and their DD-214. Flu vaccinations can also be obtained at any scheduled appointment you have with your care team. If veterans do not have an appointment and want to receive the flu vaccination, veterans can call their primary care team to be seen. Veterans are asked to bring a VA healthcare ID, wear a loose-fitting short-sleeve shirt, and wear a mask. Eligible veterans can also receive a no-cost seasonal flu shot at one of more than 60,000 Community Care Network in-network retail pharmacies and urgent care locations. No appointment or VA referral is required. Veterans need to present a valid government-issued identification, such as a Veterans Health ID card, Department of Defense ID card, state-issued driver's license, or ID card. And finally, from the Community Briefs section, in Hubston, library to reopen for curbside service. The director of the Hubston Public Library was notified on Friday, October 9th, of a positive COVID-19 test for a staff member. The library closed for the weekend. For the health and safety of both staff and patrons, the library will take this time to thoroughly disinfect the building and allow staff to be tested. The library expects to reopen today for curbside service only, as previously announced. And that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. My name is Greg, and it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope you have a splendid day. Take care.